Hi, I'm Simon Devereaux, Director of Global Talent Development at Framestore, and welcome to the Framestore podcast, a learning and talent development focused podcast made by Framestore for Framestore. In this two-part episode, we're celebrating International Women's Day and Women's History Month by speaking to three of our Framestore studio heads for Montreal, London, and New York. That's Malinka Thompson-Godoy, Lizzie Bedford, and Tara Maloney, respectfully. Spotlighting female leadership at Framestore is quickly becoming a tradition on the pod, and we are certainly spoiled for choice on this episode. So here we go. Episode 40, part one of the Framestore podcast, our International Women's Day special. Enjoy. Welcome back to another episode of the Framestore podcast, episode 40. Every 2 weeks, we invite both a guest from our global Framestore community and a co-host with a keen interest in our guest's role, craft, or career path, and we let the magic happen. That said, we're continuing our hiatus from our usual format with a full two-part episode dedicated to International Women's Day. This year's theme is Inspire Inclusion, or hashtag Inspire Inclusion. And to do this, we thought what a great opportunity we have on the pod to bring together some of our Framestore studio heads, a leadership focused conversation, if you like, through the lens of International Women's Day. So to do this, our special guests this week are, in no particular order, Malinka Thompson-Godoy, head of Studio Montreal, Tara Maloney, head of Studio New York, and Lizzie Bedford, head of Studio London. So let's do some intros. Malinka started out working on location on film sets in various roles, as well as working for New York independent film company Good Machine. She got her start in VFX in 2004 at Amoeba Proteus. This then led to a number of VFX production roles where she amassed credits on iconic shows such as 24, classic, Lost, also classic, and cult classic movies such as Across the Universe, Speed Racer, and The Spirit. In 2012, she joined DNEG, where she stayed for 10 years, working her way to head of production, then made the move to Framestore in April 2022 as head of Studio Montreal. The last 15 years has seen Malinka credited on the Hunger Games trilogy, Skyfall, Avengers Infinity War, and more recently on Guardians 3, among many, many others. I think you should check the IMDb profiles of all of our guests today, but they're the ones I'm focusing on. Tara has been in the industry since 2012, where she moved from freelance video editor to a role at production company Red Car in their New York office as associate producer. After a year, she quickly moved to A&E Television Networks as producer, then took on a senior producer position at Smoke and Mirrors, where after just a few years became the company's head of production. Tara continued her leadership role at Taylor James Limited after almost 6 years with Smoke and Mirrors. Then at the start of 2020, Tara joined the Framestore New York team as head of production, then swiftly promoted to head of studio a couple of years later. Lizzie started out at Framestore as a runner and then within just 2 weeks got her break as VFX coordinator in 2001. Her career since has been a fascinating step-by-step career path in visual effects, from working on The Tale of Despero as production coordinator to animation and VFX associate producer on Where the Wild Things Are, then supporting our work on Avatar as associate VFX producer, all between 2006 and 2009. Lizzie then forged a career path in resourcing as crew manager in late 2009, then central resource manager in 2013, and head of global resource planning for 3 years from 2014. Lizzie continued her leadership journey as joint head of production for film in 2016, then took on the role of global head of resourcing in 2019, and now head of studio for London since January last year. Too many credits to reel off here, but more recently, I should note Guardians 3, Wonka, and The Little Mermaid, plus special mentions to Oscar winner Gravity, the Paddington movies, and a multitude of MCU titles. Anyway, happy International Women's Day, Women's History Month, and welcome to the Framestore podcast. Tara, Lizzie, and Malinka, how the devil are you?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Busy at the moment, isn't it? Across film, and I'm sure Tara's busy too, right? Yes, it's crazy right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And it's an absolute privilege to get 2 hours of your time. When we talked about this, and we should do a special shout out to Naomi Stopra, who's our head of studio in Vancouver, can't make this call. And also we should give a shout out to Lara Hopkins, our head of studio in Melbourne as well, who got her own episode a couple of months ago. So she can't complain for not being on this one. I'm sure she's listening. But getting any group of heads of studio in a virtual room or physical is a challenge, right? And we made it happen. I mean, I know we bounced a few dates around, but here we are. So thank you so much for giving me your time. And we've got 2 hours together, right? So I can see you're all like very excited to get into this discussion.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you. So let's get into it, really. So this episode, we kicked off the podcast back in 2022, late 2022. And last year, we famously, and I say famously, you know, the podcast has a few subscribers. We're not kind of toast of the town just yet or winning any awards. But famously, we originally started doing some International Women's Day episode and spoke to loads of producers and we spoke to loads of senior creatives and managers across all of our pipelines and all of our global studios. And it was going to be a month of episodes. It became like a 3-month kind of series because we had so much talent. And we thought, well, let's condense that down and get 3 of you on one episode rather than 3 months of, which I'm sure would be great content. So we're here celebrating International Women's Day and Women's History Month, but also really talking about leadership and leading studios with 3, I would say, people in their prime working in the visual effects industry, getting it done. And I guess my first question and the most obvious one to throw out to you before we open the dailies and the dramatic sound effect is, what does International Women's Day mean to you? I mean, I'm going to pick one of you at random because I know nobody likes to speak first on these things. But Malinka, you know, what does International Women's Day mean to you? Does it mean anything to you? Is it important in your view?
Well, personally, it's very important because actually International Women's Day was the day that my daughter was born. So it'll always be special because it's her birthday. But also it's obviously it's a celebration of womanhood, of femininity, of women's achievements. And and also historically has been focused around conversations about reproductive rights, gender equality, protecting women against abuse. And these are all issues that are still very, very prevalent and need to be focused on now just as much as they were, you know, in the history.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for platforms such as International Women's Day to have these issues at heart and to be able to have these discussions and have attention brought to them on this day. But also it's the month, Women's Month. And it then you start to have this conversation, you can continue them throughout the year. So it's nice to be able to bring them back up again.
Yeah.
During this day. So it is quite an important day for me.
Yeah, no, and certainly I think it's important not just to limit these conversations just 1 month, because it used to be just one day, didn't it? I think then it became a month, but it should be something that we talk about all the time, really. I mean, representation is a conversation that I certainly have a lot with my, whether it's my training hat on at Framestore or my Axis VFX kind of external nonprofit hat. It's huge, isn't it? I think it's important to have a stake in the ground, if that's fair to say, as much as it sometimes feels like a tokenistic thing just to go, this is the day we must celebrate a certain protected group, right? So I think that's a great answer. Thank you, Malinka, and happy birthday to your daughter. This episode drops just after International Women's Day, but so I'm sure we can pretend that we've had the celebrations, but it's on the horizon. How about you, Tara? Tell me, what does it mean to you over there in New York City?
Well, I think, you know, I've been the benefit of a lot of women in the industry helping to support me and help me grow during my career. So it's a chance to celebrate those women and look back on that. But I also think that, you know, we're only as strong as we are diverse. So as far as we've come, it's just a reminder just to keep moving that needle forward.
Absolutely. And your point around the people that have kind of put you there, we're going to talk about important mentors as part of the dailies questions. So I hope you've all come prepared to do loads of shout outs for people that have put you in, because we always pay it forward on the podcast, right? It's always good to kind of raise up all those brilliant mentors. And I'm sure you're all great mentors as well, right? I know, I'm pretty sure all 3 of you are involved in the Global Mentoring Program, but mentoring goes beyond official programs, right? It's part of the day-to-day, particularly in your roles. I mean, whether it comes to role modeling and leading, it comes with a turf, right? Is that fair to say, Lizzie?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Malinka and Tara have said it all, but, you know, it's a good moment, I think, for us to acknowledge that, you know, not all women's experiences are equal, but it's time to celebrate each other and it's time to look positively towards the future. You know, historically, women have made significant contributions that have been overlooked or underplayed. So you know, I totally agree with, you know, Tara and Malinka's sentiments and what they've said. I think it's a really important time for us to review and think about.
Thank you, Lizzie. And yeah, I mean, the talking about kind of creating the conversation and celebrating achievements of women, particularly in visual effects. This is the Framestore podcast, right? But particularly at Framestore, like when we talk about female leadership, we often go to our, you know, top tier kind of CEO and COOs, and there's a lot of female representation right at the top. And I often forget, weirdly, that we've got so many amazing heads of studio. When we were planning this episode, I was like, why haven't I got all of the heads of studio on one podcast and just had this conversation? Because personally, as a person who's been podcasting for years, I'm absolutely sport for choice with talent. I mean, this is unheard of, right? I mean, having worked in lots of companies in the past, it's like, who are we going to get on this episode or at this event or this panel conversation? And it's a real privilege to be here having this discussion now. I mean, these episodes are always a great privilege for me, but particularly in the context of International Women's Day and Women's History Month, right? I mean, this is brilliant.
Yeah, we're really lucky, aren't we, as a group of females, as all being heads of studio. It's really, really cool.
That's what drew me to Framestore so much, is that so much of the leadership is comprised of women. Absolutely. Yeah. It is quite special here at Framestore in that regard. I love it.
Well, as the member of Mel's direct reports, most in touch with his feminine side, I'm proud to be here having this conversation fully out. Now, sticking with you, Lizzie, actually, on the preamble. So we're talking about what International Women's Day means to the three of you. But what does the campaign theme mean to you, do you think? Because I always find the campaign themes quite general often with International Women's Day. And this year's campaign theme is Inspire Inclusion. What's your takeaway from that thing?
So I think it's a great theme this year, but I think Framestore is really already out there. Like, I'm really proud of the work that Amy Smith and Framestore does for the outreach programs, you know, all the, you know, what we achieve in those. And I've visited quite a few schools with Amy, and we've sat with children and in all different levels of secondary school and primary school. And we've explained how VFX is accessible to all. So I think Inspiring Inclusion really nails it. Mm. And every time we do an assembly and Amy stands up there and talks about stuff, I'm just like, oh my God, I fall in love with VFX all over again.
Yeah.
And the children ask loads of questions, and I feel just really proud to be a part of that. And I think we are, you know, that's how we are including people, and we're trying to inspire young people, especially young women as well. So that to me, it kind of nails it. We're doing it, we're out there, and I'm like, the other sites, from a London point of view, that's the other sites can talk for what they do. But yeah, for me, it's a great theme this year, but I think Framestore are at the forefront of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, taking Inspire Inclusion and relating it to outreach and inspiring the next generation of talent, whether it be from that, as you say, Lizzie, that primary school age, or whether it's young people, or even people who don't even know about careers in visual effects, who are kind of making career decisions now, kind of in their teens, or even career changes further down the pipe. I mean, it's something that's very close to my heart, is there's lots of people out there who don't even know we exist as an industry in all of our various geographies, right?
100%.
That's a great answer. Thank you, Lizzie. What about you, Tara? What's your interpretation of Inspire Inclusion?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Lizzie made such a good point that Framestore already does, you know, so much in this area. But I think that it's just important that we always keep in mind that we can do more for marginalized groups.
Yeah.
So we should just be pushing that forward as much as possible.
Yeah. Tara, do you find that you're kind of called on to speak to next gen talent a lot, whether it be outreach, whether it be peers in studio or people just joining the company? Or
absolutely. And then sometimes people just, you know, will reach out and be like, I've got a friend of a friend of a friend that wants to get into the industry, and can you have a chat with them? And I find those really inspiring, because it's usually people at, you know, just entering the industry and getting into this career path, and asking really insightful questions.
And there's, I mean, I've used the term privilege quite a lot, but there's a real privilege in doing that, right? Because I think those little interactions that you have, and I'm sure all three of you get called upon to, can you speak to this person or go to this event? Or Lizzie, you talked about going out to kind of schools and outreach events. Is those, I always say that everybody's always one conversation away from changing their life. I've thrown that away on the podcast loads of times, but I say it a lot because it's true. And I think you being asked to give half an hour of your time, and actually, this podcast is a great format for that, because it's full of advice and stuff. So this will live forever. So actually, we could put this podcast out. You don't have to speak to anyone ever again. You can get on with the day job if you want. You just go listen to this and then come back to me if you've got any questions. Only joking. But I do genuinely think those interactions are super super wonderful, because you may think you're just going, well, this is what I do and here's some advice and blah, blah, blah. And then you hang up and you go about your day. And to them, that is gold dust. And you have already set that person on a completely different trajectory than they would have gone on, if that makes sense. Do you believe in that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I do. I mean, when I've gone to the schools and see the students, you know, they've run some competitions, which is really quite exciting. So before Amy and I get there, they run these competitions and they pick 30 of the best projects to come and sit and talk to us, and all the questions that get asked. My favourite one, which made me absolutely cringe, was, oh, I was told I could only get into film to do hair and makeup. And I was like, oh, my life, who told you that? I will find them. Wow. You know, that's so not the case. We want all sorts of students from all sorts of backgrounds. So yeah, so I feel like it's a real, I love it. I love it, actually. I feel like that's my give back. I don't know what you think, Malinka, but yeah, I feel that's my give back when I spend some time with other people.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with both Lizzie and Tara, and we were talking about the mentorship program earlier, and what Lizzie was saying, I think Framestore is wonderful in having that mentorship program. There's hundreds of, I mean, some of you probably know exactly the numbers, but I know that there's hundreds of people that are participating in both being mentors and mentees. And I know all three of us are here on this call, and I really look forward to the time that I've spent with my mentee, and I really enjoy that. And I think that that helps for those to realize that this is an industry that anyone can be a part of, and how to go about getting to the goals that you are trying to strive for, and what that means, and not being afraid to ask for guidance, not being afraid to ask what's the best way to realize my dreams. And I think having that support system is crucial. And, you know, Tara mentioned that she had that throughout her career with amazing women around her. And I know I have as well. And I think that helps to take us to where we are today. Having that support system, it's really important to give that back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's an absolute responsibility, isn't it? I think, because everybody's got to where they've got with some varying degrees of support system. Whether you're surrounded by amazing people, or there's that one amazing mentor. It's kind of like if you don't, there's some kind of mentor hell you go to where you just get, you know, ruined, because it's so important. It's so important to do it. And, you know, I mean, whenever anybody reaches out to me for anything career related, I always say yes, to my detriment a lot of the time. But in terms of being tired, not for, it's always a good use of my time, you know. But it's a complete responsibility, isn't it? I think you're absolutely right, Malinka. And I'm glad you've mentioned support networks, and we'll absolutely get into that on this episode of the podcast for sure. Before we get into the dailies, I just wanted to talk a bit about the kind of tradition. And again, you spoke to this, Lizzie, in some respects, around the kind of traditional, kind of arguably male-dominated industry. Now, Framestore is very lucky, particularly at senior levels and across kind of lead roles and production roles. But typically, visual effects has been male-dominated for decades, right? And I'd love to kind of understand perhaps if you've come up against any unique challenges that you've faced as female leaders in the visual effects and animation industry, and how you've dealt with them along the way. I mean, that's a big question as part of a preamble, but I'd love to kind of get a take of, you know, your experience, because I'm sitting here as, you know, a man, and I'd love to get under the skin of some of your challenges. Perhaps we could start with, let's go the opposite. And Tara, you seem to be in the middle all the time, so I'm just going to start with you, Tara.
Sounds good. I don't know about, you know, challenges now that I'm a leader, but I think as I was coming up, I had quite a few. I think traditionally, I had to work a lot harder than some of my male counterparts to receive the similar recognition or positions. And, you know, in some cases was treated quite poorly by male supervisors. But to be honest with you, I think all of that experience just informed me and the kind of leader that I wanted to be and become. And I wouldn't necessarily change that path, but it did help me become the leader that I am today.
Yeah. Can I ask, because I hear that a lot about you have to go that extra mile I'm going to say kind of typically as a non-male in this industry a lot of the time, and white male, because I think it's also attributed to people of color as well. They have to kind of work harder to get the same reward. How does that manifest it? What does that look like? Is it literally just putting the hours in, or, you know, what does that look like when you say that, Tara, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely working longer hours, more dedication. I think that in my experience, some of my male counterparts were able to just be a bit more flippant about the work. And right. I always felt like I had to make sure I made it clear I was taking the work very seriously.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you, Tara. What about you, Lizzie? What's your hot take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, Tara kind of said it, but I don't know, my career has always been at Framestore, and there's been some spicy supervisors, obviously, but I can honestly say it wasn't me. Like, I can honestly say when I worked here, I've never felt like my gender at Framestore has hindered me. Mm-hmm. I think it says a lot on other people, their behaviour and the way they work. And obviously, I really appreciate that, you know, that's not the case and experience for everyone. So I do find I am quite lucky. But if I think about the challenges as a female leader, you know, mine really stems from, you know, a bit like Malinka, like when I became a mum and the mental load of being a mother and working really hard and, you know, having that all wrapped up and learning how to deal with that, working and parenting and that lovely guilt, that parent guilt we sometimes all feel. I don't know. I'm sure some people can relate to that. So for me, that's my challenge. I was 100% work focused and until family came along, and then that, it's just trying to get that balance. That's been a real big challenge. So I hope that resonates with some people. Yeah. Like, you're not out there on your own, you know. People have been through that, and it's good to talk about stuff like that. I don't think we talk about the mental load on women doing everything at work and then everything at home.
And is that, I imagine that's a balancing act that perhaps we never quite achieve as parents. It's almost kind of utopia.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The day when it's all a well-oiled machine and everything's just working beautifully. Yeah, studio's all good. The kids are sorted. Yeah. Mm. But no, I completely get that. Does that resonate with you, Malinka? I can see you smiling
there. Absolutely. I agree with what Tara said. I mean, I think perceptions are slowly changing. And in the past, if you were a strong-minded woman, it meant you were difficult to work with. But yet opinionated men were applauded at companies.
Yeah, I know.
And that was really a struggle because we are all alphas here. So we are very opinionated and very strong-minded women. So we've had to overcome that perception. But also, I do agree with Tara that you do feel like you have to prove yourself, where your male counterparts don't necessarily have to prove themselves as much as we have had to gain that respect in the roles that we're in. And you kind of feel like you're just a guest at the table. You're not an integral part of the team. And I have not felt that at Framestore. I do want to say that. I think, again, because so much leadership is comprised of women here at Framestore, I did feel like an integral part of the team from the minute I joined. Yeah. And I do really appreciate that about the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the need to triple down on that. But I have never felt that way here at Framestore.
Good to know. I mean, the one thing that I was really taken by, and part of my research, and I know I was joking about it before we hit record. I mean, my research is always limited to what I can find on LinkedIn and perhaps a bit of IMDb peppered along the way. But it's really interesting to kind of take it all three of your career paths and condense them down into those kind of throwaway paragraphs, you know, of just dates and roles, right? I'd love to get your take on that because we talked about kind of you know, making it, getting there, right? Proving yourself. Great. That's a great word. You've proved yourself. All three of you are heads of studio for one of the biggest visual effects, you know, content creation studios in the world.
It's pretty awesome when you say it like that, isn't it?
It's pretty cool, isn't it? Right. I mean, that's me. That's from the inside out or outside in or however we want to call it. But it's going through all of those credits and all of those years, and all of those routes in. It's a proper hustle, right? It's a proper grind. Just, you know, manifested in a kind of, you know, podcast friendly soundbite. But now that all three of you are heads of studio, have you won that battle now? You know, whether it be the perceptions or, as you said, Malinka, you know, if you're a confident kind of brash man, you're seen as dynamic and, you know, go-getter. If the equivalent is on the female side, you're seen as kind of bossy and it's all those kind of awful stereotypes that take place. But all three of you are super ridiculously credible. Is that battle won, or is there still a bit of work to do, whether it be for you as individuals or for the greater good? I think there's a question in there somewhere.
I mean, personally, I'm very happy to where I am today, and I don't have a single regret, and I love the job that I do. I do still see other struggling to get that recognition and to find their place in this industry. So I think for me, it's now looking at the team and then that paying it forward again of seeing someone that might be questioning, can I be a supervisor? Yeah. Can I be a leader? And then bringing that person under your wing and trying to help that person to realize their full potential and to not give up and to fight for what they believe in, to fight for what they know they have the talent and the experience to take to the next level. I feel that women tend to want to stay in their roles and get it, know it exactly perfectly before they move on to the next step. And and you find, again, sort of stereotypically, men want to take that leap, and that's okay, they'll figure it out as they get there. And so that's a very different way of approaching your role. And that's fine, but I think it stops a lot of women from taking that next step because they don't feel like they're ready. And the truth of the matter is, you don't need to be ready, because you can figure certain things out as you get there. And there are things that you need the experience to do to really realize that full potential. And we're here to show them that and to kind of lead them up the ladder as best as we can.
It's true, actually, yeah. That's a great answer, because potential is, I mean, you recruit full potential, don't you? You hire full potential. I don't think anybody's taken on somebody with the exact skill set to do the job, because they've got nowhere to go. So the way you've kind of put that is actually quite mind-blowing, really. It's quite obvious when you state it like that, Malinka, but it is like somebody's got to grow in a role. You know, you can't just go, right, tick, 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 you can do the job to the nth degree. Where are they going to grow? They'll be 6 months and they'll be on to the next big gig, right? I don't know, is there a point in there? Because I think you're about to kind of chime in there, Tara.
Yeah, I was just going to say, even to the point that sometimes when I'm hiring for a role, I don't necessarily like to put a title to it. I'd rather get a list of candidates that have the skill sets and then put the appropriate title once I find the right candidate. Because I'm looking for the person who has the right potential to fill the role, and I don't necessarily want anyone to see a title and feel like, well, I'm not there yet, or I'm too big for that title. You know, I'd rather find the right candidate than necessarily match somebody to a specific title.
That's a great point. And actually, what we're talking about here is kind of, we're talking about potential, right? But we're bringing it back to why we're here today around leadership. You know, I'm here with three leaders. Is leadership is the oldest craft in the game. I mean, I'm a head of department. I feel like I'm learning leadership craft all the time, or every podcast I do like this. I mean, I'll come out of this with some nugget that I'll take away and use personally, but we're always refining and learning leadership, right? Is that your kind of experience, Lizzie?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think people are definitely always learning. And I think, you know, one of the other questions you asked, for me, it's all about communication and talking to people and understand, really listening. Like, I'm on a big drive of listening. Yeah. So I completely agree with what Tara and Malinka have said. For me, it's, you know, it's about taking the time and stopping, you know, and getting to understand those people around you. Because I think so often, you know, you're running at 100 miles an hour and you might miss that nugget of information or that piece of something that makes you think, oh, actually, I haven't checked that, or actually, I should really go and speak to that person. That's so cool.
I think as well, it's for everyone to understand that the leaders don't have all the answers either. We're still figuring things out, and we take it day by day, and there's things that are curveballs to us as well. And I mean, for me, the head of studio role, you know, you need to be calculated and structured, but at the same time, you're quick thinking, you're flexible, you have to be prepared for anything. I mean, they're like they're working against each other, but that's the role. And visual effects is very much like that. It's unpredictable and it's predictable. So it's like, it's a very tricky, it's not an easy industry to wrap your head around. So it's meant to be a bit confusing. It's meant to be that you kind of figure it out as your day goes on. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, and they think, do I need to know all the answers? Do I have to have it all figured out? And you don't.
Nobody
and that's
does,
why
right?
we're all here to support you. It's not visual effects doesn't get made with one person. It gets made with thousands of people, and we're all here to support each other to get there.
And I think that's why Lizzie mentioned stopping and pausing. And I think that's a real, I mean, I imagine coming from, you all have kind of similar career paths in production and crewing and resourcing. And the nature of that work, and again, I've never worked in crewing, resourcing, or production, but what I hear is it's very fast-paced, as you say, Malinka, it's very quick decisions, bam, 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 you know, pressure's on, right? And then you get into a leadership role where the pressure's still on, but as you say, there are moments where you're going to have to take a back seat, listen, be curious, ask questions, give people room, all of that good stuff. I mean, is that a craft that you all continue to learn with that production DNA, or is it a natural segue from production? Because I think a lot of VFX leaders tend to come through production routes.
I think for me, it's definitely not natural. My first instinct is to attack a problem head on and find the solution. But as I've grown in my career, it's definitely a skill set that I've worked on. I think every single person on my team is probably tired of me giving them the advice, take a walk around the block. That's the advice I yeah. give to myself sometimes when I'm dealing with some of these very large problems. Just take a walk around the block and the problem will actually be better when you sit back down at your desk.
Yeah, kind of reveals itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I used to go for long walks with my manager years ago. We'd just go up and down the Thames once and just talk it out, and then we'd get back to it rather than just kind of those quick decisions in the moment. Because again, it's a great advice there. We'll get that.
Yeah, it helps with that work-life balance too, because when I was younger, I can't tell you how many times I pulled an all-nighter getting this bid out or getting this week report out, only to find out at 8 a.m. that the client was like, oh, I don't need that right now. Or, oh, this is completely changed. So can you redo this now for next week? And I was like, okay, I should just let it sit and just thought about it and really, you know, it's fine. It's okay. I'll deal with it in the morning. And you sort of learn that as you get that experience to go, not everything needs to happen right away. It's okay to take a moment to think about what your next step is.
And that's exactly the same. I think when I moved from production into crewing, I did exactly the same, Malinka. I sat there all night plugging in about 50 crew sheets, going through them all, worked out this amazing plan. And then I got up the next morning and everything had changed. The producers had given me a whole lot of crew sheets. And I was like, why did I do that? So, you know, it's just one of those things there. So often it's, we need 700 people right now. And you go, okay, we'll call you back in an hour. And it's now 2. Oh, it's 2 now. Let's work on the 2, you know. So it's kind of, you know, and people are just trying to do the best and trying to, they're focused on their show, aren't they? So that's totally fine as well. But it is, you know, if crewing reacted to absolutely everything every second of the day, it would just, there'd be carnage. But so it's interesting. It's very interesting, the difference between the roles.
Yeah. And I would even say that I think becoming a mother actually helped me with that, because it gave me a bit more perspective. It sort of forces you to be a bit more balanced with the work life and not to pull all these all-nighters that we used to do coming up. So, you know, in many ways, becoming a mother makes our positions more difficult, but I would say it, in that way in particular, it's helped me.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
Yeah. I mean, it puts it all into perspective sometimes, becoming a parent, doesn't it? I think the nature of visual effects, my experience is, you know, whether I've been watching, you know, I've worked for a number of studios over the years, this is the most important thing to ever happen in the history of the universe, right? And then you become a mother, even a father in my case. And then it's like, wait a minute, you know, you know, I'm responsible for this. You know, if I give everything to this bucket, the career bucket, what happens to the being a father bucket, or in your case, mother? And it does turn a switch, doesn't it? It's a dial. It's not like an off button. We're just kind of trying to get that balance. And it's hard work. It goes back to what you all said at the start of the podcast about that kind of, you know, the chalice of the work-life balance that we all aim for. But it does change things, doesn't it? Like you say, Tara, it's a big leveler. Plus there's the whole management. Was it the mantra of being a manager? It's kind of like the parent. You're almost kind of like a version of a parent to thousands of people, but, you know, not a micromanager. You're not packing their lunches for them or anything. You know,
it does force you to be more productive, because you want to have that work-life balance and you have those responsibilities. And no matter where you are in your career, if you have a family or even, you know, some folks that have their fur babies, they're family too, and they have responsibilities they need taken care of. And you have to work that into your schedule, and you have to then be more productive to go, this is what's important to me right now today. This is what I can put off to tomorrow. This is what I can put off to next week. And it really forced me, as Tara was saying, it really forced me to look at my to-do schedule. Mm-hmm. Instead of just staying all night to try to cover everything, I finally was able to focus on what's needed today, what's needed this week, and everything else can wait, and I can focus on my other priorities as well, right? So it really helped. It really helped in that sense.
You'll get done, right? Yeah. All right. I had a feeling this would happen. We'd get into a conversation, and I haven't asked you one official question yet. This is all the preamble still.
Oh, God.
We're 35 minutes into the podcast. I told you, it's such a good, fascinating conversation. Again, thank you for giving me your time. So if it's okay with the three of you, Tara, Malinka, and Lizzie, do I have your permission to drop the dramatic sound effect and open the dailies?
Go for it.
Okay, here it comes. Drum roll. And we're into the dailies. Right, I always start the dailies with the obvious questions that I kind of covered off in the preamble intro. But I threw so many dates and years and job titles that our listeners have probably forgot. So I'm going to get to it. So my first question is, who, where, what? Who are you, where are you, and what are you working on but only if you're allowed to talk about it. We might have to bleep some things out. So let's start with Lizzie, and we'll go Malinka and then Tara.
So I'm Lizzie Bedford. That's my who. My where is I'm in London. And what am I working on? Well, I'm currently the head of studio for London Film.
Amazing. Thank you, Lizzie. Malinka.
My name is Malinka Thompson-Godoy. I am the head of studio for the Montreal office. We have 12 active projects in-house, and my goal is to support the studio, do whatever I can to support the shows, to deliver on time and on budget with a happy crew and a happy client, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do because we're constantly having daily curveballs thrown at all the teams, and just try to support as best we can.
I'm excited to hear more about that balance, well, that insight into running a studio, because it's something I know nothing of and probably something I'll never do. You guys are welcome to it. It sounds very stressful. So we'll get into that. Tara, tell me, who, where, what?
I'm Tara Maloney. I am in the Bronx, New York, and I'm the head of studio for New York. Similar to Malinka and Lizzie, my primary role is solving many of the issues that come up day to day and keeping the big picture in mind as well.
I love that. And you'll dodge the what question, which is what you're working on, because we can't talk about it. I love that. I love the kind of wonderful irony that I ask the question, but nobody can tell me, which is great. And I understand. And tenure. So I threw the dates around, but how long have you worked here? So if we start with Tara, how long have you been at Framestore?
A little over 4 years.
Good 4 years. Okay. Malinka, how long's your tenure?
So I'm an interesting one in that I started working at Framestore in April of 2022, and then I learned I was pregnant with my second child in June of 2022.
Yes,
so it's spent my first year pregnant at the company, and then went on maternity leave in March of 2023 and just came back in January of this year. So I guess you'd say, even though I've been at the company for 2 years, I've worked at the company for about a year.
Well, continuous service counts, Malinka. So we don't count it. So yeah, all good. And congratulations, of course, Malinka. And Lizzie, how long have you been with us?
Oh, I think it's about 22 years. So
boom.
Long time.
Brilliant. Good. Well, we just, our last episode, we had Alison Turner and Elvis Baptiste from our London studio, who are kind of almost the employees number 2 and 3, I think. So we're in fine company here as well. We'll get some old stories from back in the day, I'm sure. I'd love to hear more about your running experience, Lizzie, as well, because I think that career path is super interesting. So we're getting into that's the admin questions. Now we're going to get into the really meaty stuff. So my next question is, how did you get your break in the VFX industry? And I caveat this question with the word break, because some people say the break is the first job. Right, we just talked about Lizzie getting the job as a runner. That could be Lizzie's first break. Or it might be a moment during your career where you've gone, wait a minute, this is what I want to do, or this is where I want to stay. I'll let you be the judge. So Malinka, tell me, what do you consider to be your break in the visual effects industry?
I definitely consider my break in the VFX industry to be the first job, which was working for Amoeba Proteus, which was Darren Aronofsky's visual effects arm in New York City. They hired me as a coordinator. I didn't know anything about visual effects. They basically taught me my first visual effects terminology. They opened my eyes to this world, and I've only worked in visual effects ever since. It's also led to all of my next jobs from that first job, right? Because you start to have then, you enter into the community that is visual effects, the worldwide community that is visual effects, and everyone's interconnected, and it's just this amazing network. And even to this day, I work with individuals who I knew from those days. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great community, isn't it? Like no other. That's been my experience in the short time I've been in the industry. What was your first VFX terminology that you learned at Amoeba Proteus, Malinka? Do you remember?
I think it was DPX.
Nice.
Which we don't use anymore, because then we went to EXRs. But yeah, it was. I think I remember that. I mean, literally everything. When I interviewed, I said I can coordinate whatever you need me to coordinate, but I don't know anything about visual effects, and you're going to have to teach me what that means. And they said, "Great, we're happy to do that. And here you go." And it was amazing. They, as far as mentorship goes, they were a great couple of mentors for me.
You may have answered my little sub question there, which is what made it a great experience. Was it the mentorship and the community you mentioned? You know, what was the moment in that role where you're like, this is where I belong? These are my people.
I mean, it was the perfect marriage between what the filmmaker wants and that artistry versus the technology. And I just fell in love with it. I've always been fascinated by movie making in general. And then seeing the intricacies of how difficult visual effects is, like the mathematics of it, the tech of it, the fact that you've got these incredible minds, you know, people that are engineers, mechanical engineers, and, you know, have these just brilliant backgrounds, but also artists and also incredibly talented. Just, I've never experienced that before in any other industry. And I love filmmaking. So it continues to fascinate me to this day. Fell in love.
Yeah, those two worlds shouldn't work, really, should they? That's the thing I've learned about visual effects. You've got this uber mathematical techie world, like they call it blue energy, don't they? Kind of head down, cause and effect. And then you've got these kind of this creative storytelling, amazing, you know, kind of artistry on one side. And then they kind of come together to create this glorious mesh of what we do, visual effects, animation, etc. Right. It's, and you had that early on, Malinka, which is great. I didn't quite get that until about 5 years ago. So you're ahead of the pack there, Malinka. Lizzie, tell us a bit about what you consider to be your break in the visual effects industry.
Yeah, no, I was lucky enough. I applied to Framestore to just send my CV in, and that was back in 2001, and they offered me a job as a runner. So I ran for about 2 weeks, and then this American producer that just come over needed a personal assistant on Dinotopia, the TV series. Hired me, so that was really cool. And then after that, I did The Potters. I did Superman Returns. You know, I just kept climbing that production ladder to producer. And then I moved into the wonderful world of crewing, which was, you know, multiple shows, multiple people needing different caliber and different skill set. And yeah, I just went from there, really. And yeah, it's an amazing industry, isn't it? Like the creativity versus the technology. And I suppose every film is so different. I don't know whether Malinka and Tara felt like every project, every film was so different. So even though I might have stayed somewhere for 22 years, every time I was put on another project by Fiona, you know, there was always something different to get your head around, new tech, you know, it's new people, new personalities, new creative, you know. So it's, for me, 22 years has gone really fast. It's really changed. It's a real dynamic studio. So
yeah, it's a good take.
So yeah, so that was my break.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, talking about the industry, the idea that you bounce from project to project, and like you say, it is like a different director. There's a different script. There's a different, whether it's a commercial, a theme park ride, a movie, a piece of episodic content, it's always a different vibe, right? Again, I've never worked on a project. It's weird. I've always kind of like around the kind of surface in learning development support role, but you know, I hear about it. That's why I do the podcast, really. I get this inside look. I do it for pure selfish reasons, just to kind of get the inside track. But I do find it must be amazing to bounce around. That's why I think people stay in the industry for so long, is it never gets boring, I imagine, right? I mean, Lizzie, I'd love to hear about, you said you sent your CV/resume for our American listeners and Canadian listeners back in the day, right, 2001. I mean, what led you to send your CV to Framestore?
It's a bit of a story. So I was working for a company I can't really talk about, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
And controversial. And I was made redundant. And I remember, this is so silly. I remember sitting in the graveyard thinking, oh gosh, I left uni, I got this job, I was there for 6-7 months, I was made redundant just because of work schedules and stuff. And this lady said to me, you know, you're quite young to be working where I was working. You should speak to my friend. There's a guy called Sean. He works in a really cool company called Framestore. And my eyes lit up. I was just like, oh, okay. So I hunted Sean down. I sent him an email. He never responded. So I just emailed directly into the HR team. And that's luckily how I got my foot in the door. So, you know, if it hadn't been for sitting in that graveyard talking to that lady.
Graveyard, quite prophetic, isn't it? That's quite a romantic image. Yeah.
So yeah, well, I was really lucky, but I did, you know, I did have the interview, and you know, and
here you are.
I wasn't a great runner, I'll put it out there.
Well, 2 weeks. I mean, 2 weeks is a short period of time to be running. I mean, most people run for years.
Well, I got lost quite a bit in Soho, so I was, you know, I live out in Hertfordshire, so I'm not from London. I don't, you know, so they were just like, well, let's just keep her in house, and we'll do.
Don't let her
out. So that's a bit embarrassing. So, but yeah, so it was great. It was great first start, actually.
Wicked. Cool. I'm sure we'll return to that, Lizzie. Thanks for sharing. I love the graveyard story. See, I always learn something new about everyone on these podcasts. That's brilliant. Tara, tell me about your big break then, because you came in through various kind of production agency roles, right, and production kind of company roles. But I'd love to kind of hear the scoop on what your big moment was.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I applied to every post house in New York City. I just wanted to get my foot in the door. And eventually I was hired as a receptionist at an offline house. And I was committed to being the best receptionist that they had ever seen. I was just thought if I could absorb as much knowledge as I possibly could and ask questions and stay late and commit myself that, you know, I could make a career out of it. Mm-hmm. And I was very quickly promoted to an associate producer at that company. And I still remember, you know, getting my first commercial on the air and the excitement of that feeling of watching it. You know, this is when we would watch TV live and not streaming. So it was really exciting and, you know, sort of just grew from there. But that not for lack of trying to get into basically every single place in New York.
I love that you had to committed yourself to be the best receptionist ever walked the earth. I mean, what does that look like? I mean, I imagine walking into a studio and this amazing ray of light, like, what do you need? Cup of coffee, blah, 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 you know, what's the secret to being the best receptionist in town, which has led to you being head of studio in New York, Tara?
Yeah, I mean, it's just making sure that, it was a small boutique company. Yeah. So staff was about, you know, 25 people, but just making sure every single person had what they needed at all times, anticipating needs, making sure our clients were happy. And
I mean, there's a sub question there, which I know I've sent to you all. I mean, you all shared your big break. Throughout those kind of big breaks and those early moments, as women, you know, were there any challenges you faced in those early days? I mean, apart from what we've already discussed in our preamble, but did you find any challenges? Or, you know, I mean, Tara, I imagine if a man joined one of those agencies, I'm sure they just resided to being the most average basic receptionist, and you had to be like the sent from the heavens kind of amazingness. But are there any kind of hurdles that you kind of had in those early days? I'll throw this out to the three of you, because there may not be, but I'd love to hear more.
I would say, you know, I came from a technical background. You know, I knew, I think, as easily as I was applying to receptionist positions, I was also applying to, you know, assistant editor or vault manager, you know, when we had those positions. And those were just typically male dominated. And, you know, I think receptionist was my foot in the door, just because that was typically a female position. Yeah.
That's what it took. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Thank you, Tara. I mean, interestingly, Tara and Lizzie, you both came through the kind of arguably the traditional routine, whether it be through the running program or reception. It still happens to this day, right? Malinka, you got your break in a studio, right? On film sets, yeah. Yeah, of course. It was in the intro, wasn't it? My bad.
My entry into the entertainment industry, not necessarily visual effects, I worked for almost 10 years prior to getting into the visual industry. I was in production, so I was working on film sets. I mean, I went to college in New York City. And my first ever job as a teenager was working at my local movie theater, selling concessions and tickets. So all I've ever known is the entertainment industry. It's all I've ever wanted to do, and I love it. And I couldn't think of doing anything else. And so my first years, through my 20s, I was on film sets. I was on location working on Hollywood movies and student films and everything. And as a woman, it was very male dominated, and there weren't that many women on these sets. So I was a, you know, young woman arriving to set, and they immediately thought I was talent, not crew. So they would usher me into like the extras area. They'd go, "Oh, this is where the talent goes." I'm like, no, I'm here to work. I'm a locations person, or I'm in the art department. I'm in, you know, I tried all the different roles that I could get my hands on back in those days to see what I wanted to do. And yeah, I mean, it's like being in a locker room. I mean, there's a lot of lewd comments being thrown around. You know, they kind of forget there's a woman around a lot of times, and then it's like, oh, sorry, you know, didn't see you there, kind of thing. And you just, it was something that you kind of just accepted back then, that was just how things were. You know, you just had to make your way and figure it out for yourself and just hold your ground and make sure that you got what you needed out of that experience. And I was fortunate to be able to have a lot of wonderful people around me and some really good experiences on those movie sets. And it kind of shaped my character as well. You know, kind of have to have a sort of hard exterior for a lot of things. You kind of have to let everything just kind of slide off you and not take anything personally, and all of those things, which did help me to become a leader also, because you're sort of already strengthening yourself as from a very young age. But yeah, it was definitely tricky walking onto some of these film sets, and you're one of the very few women on the crew.
It must spur you on, right? Being around that, particularly being as one of, you know, maybe the only or one of a handful of women in any environment, right? Not just on set, but in any professional creative environment. I mean, does that give you a fire in your belly to get to where you are now?
Absolutely. And I gravitated towards, so a lot of producers were, you know, have always been, production's always been more, we see a lot more women there. Yeah. So I made a point of, when I was on these film sets, to really be a sponge and kind of observe what I was wanting to learn, and really sort of be that fly in the wall in the camera department or at Video Village, watching what the directors were doing, watching what the producers were doing, and learning as I went. And just, it was really formative for me. I learned so much just by observing those around me. And that's a really important thing, because a lot of times you don't necessarily even have to do it just by observing. That's why it's really important for our juniors to be around our seniors and our leads and our supervisors, and really get a sense of, is that what I want to do? If I'm watching what this person's doing, and is that what I aspire to do by observing what this person's doing? That is something that I'm interested in. And that's what I was doing from even when I was an intern or when I was a PA on a set. I just kind of gravitated to the people that I found fascinating.
Yeah, it's a great answer. Thank you, Milinka. Anything to add, Lizzie and Tara, on that before I move into the big, cheesy, corny, what do you love about Framestore question, which is coming. It's going to get all very warm and cozy on the podcast very shortly. All right, I'm going to ask it, I'm going in. Yes, what's the best thing about being part of Framestore, people? Who wants to take this? I'm going to throw it out there, see who catches it first.
I'm going to jump in only because I feel like the three of us are going to have the same answer. So I'm just going
to... You say it, Tara.
I'm going to jump at it. It's definitely the people. We have... you know, not only the most incredibly talented artists here, but this sounds like propaganda, but genuinely pleasant people to work with. I mean, it's sort of astonishing for someone who's made their way through the industry, worked at many different companies. You know, Lizzie, I can tell you it's not the norm. It's really not. We have just genuinely talented and pleasant people here.
Yeah, there's definitely something in the air, isn't there? Thank you, Tara. What about you, Lizzie? Do you agree, or have you got a different?
No, I totally agree, and I think that's probably why I've been here for so long. You know, I can safely say that our images, the team of people that create them, you know, we are so lucky. So it's really lovely to hear that from Tara. But yeah, we just have great people, and I'm so lucky to work with my team on a daily basis. And, you know, I get to work with Milinka, you know, it's, we're so lucky, and everyone is just on everyone's side. And it sounds a bit corny, doesn't it? But I do feel like we're all in it together, and we all sit down once a week, don't we, Milinka? Yeah. And we talk about it, and we see what the issues are and what challenges we face. So yeah, I think, and every time I've gone into a different role or gone to a new project, those people have changed slightly, but they're good people, you know? So I, you know, that's why I've probably stayed where I am.
You must get these great moments on projects where you may have worked on something like years ago, like whatever it was, right? And then years might pass, and then you might jump on another show, and it's like, oh my God, you're on this again. And you reconnect with people, and there must be a real sense. I mean, we've mentioned the word community already, but you know, everybody bounces around different shows and projects all the time, right? And then people come and go in and out of industry. People leave and come back, and blah blah blah. So is that something that you experience, or at least experience when you were producing?
Yeah, 100%. Like, people leave and they go to other companies, and, you know, it's good for their experience to do that. But then quite a few people come back, and that is really heartwarming to know that they come back and they're like, oh, actually, this is the place to be. And, you know, I often hear that. So that's really exciting for us as a company.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Lizzie. Milinka, you're going to complete the set, or are you going to go off piste?
I'm going to say the team, the culture. I mean, I'm sort of in a unique position that when I joined the company, you know, I found out I was pregnant a few months later, and you would think, man, your world is over. Like, what are they going to think? I've just started this company and now I'm pregnant. And this company, I mean, Framestore, just welcomed me, did not, you know, didn't skip a beat, just, yep, absolutely, we're going to support you. no problem. I didn't feel at all like that was going to be an issue in another company that was more male dominated. Probably would have been more of an issue. I actually would have a feeling that wouldn't have been quite so smooth at another company. And everyone just is like, as Lizzie and Tara were saying, just so supportive. You know, since I've been back from maternity leave, everyone's just welcomed me back with open arms and haven't skipped a beat, just like I never left. Awesome. You know, just got right back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
And also just, I mean, just again, talking about Framestore, you know, looking at the stats, right? So 5 female heads of studios, 3 female managing directors, a female CEO, chief executive of Film Episodic, a COO of Film Episodic, multiple female global heads and local heads of departments. It's amazing. Yeah. It's the first time in my 20 years of working in visual effects that I'll be sitting in management meetings and it's more women than men in these meetings. And that's, you don't find that anywhere else. It's quite a unique company.
Even as a man, that's refreshing. I mean, my experience at Framestore has been that, but I find that really refreshing because I'm all about different perspectives and viewpoints. And I've had years of sitting in meetings with people who look like me, and Framestore is completely switched around. I'm not as handsome as me, of course, or cool as me, but you know, I'm joking. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you go into those meetings and it's wicked and you get so many different perspectives. I think there's nothing worse than sitting in a room with people that just see the world like you. And I think it's a real positive. It's really cool. It's a great answer. Thank you, Malinka. Well, that was part one. Join us for part two of the Framestore podcast out this Thursday as Tara, Lizzie and Malinka continue to take on the Framestore podcast daily's questions. See you then.